Welcome back to JK Moto Podcast, a motorcycle podcast for the everyday rider, covering current bike and racing news, specializing in track days, club racing, and great entertainment. We truly do it all. And this episode is brought to you by JK Moto Entertainment, your one-stop shop for your motorcycle track day and club racing questions and answers. Subscribe on YouTube, follow on Facebook and Instagram at JK Moto Entertainment. We're going to get right into it. We'll run a quick intro and then we'll bring on a very special guest. So stand by for the guest.
My first track day, I got the pictures back and I was like, I'm never doing that again. On the ground at 100 miles an hour.
Welcome back from the break, not to the show. Well, to the show, not to the, anyway, this way is someone that you all should know, Lugnut, who has not been on the show in a while. Everybody say hi, Lugnut.
Howdy. Hi, everybody.
We're going to catch up with him. And honestly, like, same for the audience, same for me, catch up with them. So I don't know exactly the best place to start, besides that's a street bike behind you with slicks on it, which doesn't do the dirt so well. But if I follow your Instagram, it's been a lot of dirt over there.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, I've been doing this racing stuff for about just over 5 years now. And it's been treacherous at times and amazing at times, but, you know, it's a grind. So October, after my summer season was over, I had a little bad wreck with the Cowie behind me and decided it was a good time to maybe go ride some dirt and do something a little bit different and just kind of rekindle my riding spirits. So naturally, started riding some dirt bikes and doing some motocross stuff and trail riding with some really good riders. Actually, our friend and previous host on the show, Cole, has done a ride or two with me as well. But the racer in me couldn't stay away from a race, so I actually did a couple races in the winter season on a dirt bike. Okay. Some went very well, some did not. But it was a good time, great learning experience, very humbling, you know, like, going from street where you have grip all the time, well, most of the time, and things seem to be a much more controlled environment. And then you go grid up and race in the desert for the first time, and it's just dust for 10 miles and rocks coming out of nowhere and trees trying to knock you off the bikes and whoops and everything else. Like, it was humbling and super fun, man. Like, I really love riding the dirt bike. It's been great. Recommend everybody do it. Like, it's such a fun time. It's so easy. You load your dirt bike up in the back of your truck, get a gas can and a gear bag, and you go ride. You know, it's like, I got this race trailer here. I've got $300 worth of tools on my table and parts here. I got a bike that's half empty, right, or half taken apart, waiting for tech. There's a lot more that goes into this road racing stuff. So a good, call it cross training, or just call it a damn good time. That dirt bike stuff is fun, man. So it's been a good off season. I've had a blast, you know, but it's time to put my ass back on the asphalt and do what I was born to do, maybe. Yeah.
There you go. So you said humbling, and remind me, did you, because you had some canyon carving experience before you did the road racing. Did you have any dirt experience in your background?
Legitimately not enough to consider. Like, I had a CR 250 two stroke for probably 6 months at one point in time. Okay. But it was more of like an excuse to go drink in the desert with your friends than it was riding. So
yeah. Okay.
Not much riding experience whatsoever. Like, so when I got back on a dirt bike and I started riding in August, really, it was like a baby giraffe learning to walk for the first time. It was awful. So,
you know, when you mentioned humbling, I was thinking of all the people to say that And the racer in you, as you mentioned, it makes sense. I don't know how well your races went. We can get into that. But coming from somewhere where you, depending on what club you're at and whether or not you're on the Moto America stage, but generally where I know you from, you kind of hold the top, I guess. I could see how being in a completely different world ends up being humbling.
Absolutely. You know, and even then, like, you got to stay humble, right? Like, sure, I might show up to a club race and you know, not challenged a whole lot, you know, but in ways, like, I'm always trying to help my fellow racers get faster, because the faster I get, the faster I got to go. And, mm-hmm. you know, I don't forget that there's always somebody faster, you know. The dirt bike thing was just a reminder that most of the country on dirt bikes is probably faster than me. So put me back to my first time on a racetrack, you know?
There you go.
Very relatable. Yeah. Yeah. So, as far as my races on the dirt bike, I did a team race at Mesquite, which was like a pretty gnarly race. It was 8 hours and 20 minutes, and there was 4 of us, and it was relay style. We took turns. The course was super gnarly. It was actually very rewarding just to finish that race, because it was pretty brutal. But that was a team effort. And then I decided that I was going to try my hand at like a solo effort in the desert. And there's different styles. There's like real long, real fast races, and then there's shorter, more technical races. And I signed up for a shorter, more technical one, and I got my butt handed to me. Okay. Almost puked after the first loop. Yeah, it was a challenge. Yeah. But it was fun. Like, I don't know. It's weird. It's like, what do they call it? Like tier 2 or type 2 fun or something, where it's definitely not fun when you're doing it. And then you look back at it and think that was a blast, you know?
Yeah. Type 2 fun. Sure. I never heard of that.
I think that's what it's called. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Oh, you can, I know you got fast fingers on Google. You can Google it, and that's what I'm talking about. But so yeah, that's type 2 fun. And then I decided I didn't get enough, so I went and did another desert race. And so this one was more of a fast, longer race, and it was 94 miles. It was actually, you know, my whole goal was to finish. And I finished the race. I was super proud of myself for finishing the race. I felt like I rode really well. And then on the way home, Stacy was looking up the results. I realized that I finished 3rd in my class and 4th overall in my, you know, tier, mm-hmm. if you will, like okay. B class. That's pretty damn good. I was stoked, man. That was awesome. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I got a Gas 300 2-stroke and a KX 450 4-stroke. And, you know, I don't know. It's just a good time, man. So I know most of our listeners here aren't dirt bike people, but I'll tell you, if you thought about it and you got some trails nearby or something like that, it's really inexpensive, good, fun. And a lot of the stuff that you do on a dirt bike is way different than what you do on a street bike. But bike control skills are bike control skills, and that stuff crosses over. So you go ride dirt bikes, and if you're a track guy or a canyon guy or even just a street race, street rider, the dirt bike stuff is going to make you a better rider on the street bike, I promise.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard that all over, and I feel like no matter which side of the world you've dived into, you hear that quite a bit. I guess my biggest question is, like, how weird is it getting back on the monster behind you after the winter of just being on the dirt?
Cool. So yeah, it's different, you know, like, dirt bike, the bars are tall. You're, you know, sitting way up on the bike when you're sitting and cornering. And, so I actually rode 2 weeks ago for the first time since October on mm-hmm. the ZX10. And the first session or two, I was lost, man. I was like, what am I even doing? This thing feels terrible. And, you know, but 2 sessions in, I was like, Oh yeah, I remember what I'm doing. And of course it kind of comes right back. And so today we rode, today it was practice for a CRA race. So it's California Road Racing Association, but we're not in California. We're in sunny, hot and windy Las Vegas.
Heck yeah.
I'm within tenths of my PR in traffic on a track day. So I feel like all that dirt bike riding did it justice, but it was definitely a bit of an adjustment to come back. So we had a little technical difficulty because Lugnut is not good at technology. but here we go.
Hey, you know, so it's not Lugnut.
I don't know what we're talking about.
I was just going to say, it's not lug nut not being good at technology. It's the technology not being good enough for lug nut.
That is true.
But anyway, I think you were saying something about transitioning back. It's Friday, practice day only. You're already super close to your PR down in Las Vegas.
Yeah, that was basically, I think, where we left off. And really, like, I think I was saying we were in hot Las Vegas, hot, windy, and sunny Las Vegas, not California, because we're racing with California Road Racing Association. And then my phone proved the point by turning itself off because it overheated. So, yeah, I'm in Vegas. But today's been great. A lot of people here, great turnout for California Road Racing Association. There's some good people around. The Apex Assassins are here. Got a few other guest appearances, you know, people that traveled a long way to get here, and a track that hasn't been raced on since 2021. So, Very exciting weekend up ahead. We got qualifying in the morning tomorrow, or a couple days ago when you guys see this. We got qualifying coming up tomorrow. I have a 16-lap race, an 8-lap race, and then Sunday, another 12 and another 8. So, should be a busy, fun weekend.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah, and we already kind of talked about it, but you're back on a ZX-10. Is that a new ZX-10 for the year, or revamping last year's bike?
Yes. So same as last year's bike.
Okay. Tracking. So you're down in Vegas this weekend. I happen to know that a certain club, a little bit north of Vegas, kicks off in, about 2 weeks? 2 or 3 weeks, I guess.
Yeah.
3 weeks. I assume we're still planning on heading up there. Also, I saw some news about, I don't want to get into too much drama, but some changes coming to USBA for this year. Maybe you can speak to that a little bit.
I could tell you everything you want to know about the USBA this year, that's for sure. Yeah, stand by. It's all good stuff, man. They stepped it up. It's going to be a great year, actually. But, so their season starts tomorrow as well. They have their new racer certification. And their track day and stuff, you know, it's still a little cold in Utah, so that is what it is. But we go there the first weekend of May, and that's round one for USBA. So, sidebar, me and you had talked about, because you're a brother on the East Coast, me coming out there for Road Atlanta. While the Privateer Industries rig will be making its way to Atlanta, the lug nut portion of that team will not. I will be in Utah. So okay. Round one is, I know. Dude, that was a tough decision, man. It was super tough for me. I had a blast at Atlanta. That's where I met you originally. The track is gnarly. I was really looking forward to racing there again, but there's a few reasons, and I'm not going to get into too much detail, but there's a few reasons why I won't be going, and I'll be racing in Utah a lot closer to home.
Does any of that have to do with not wanting to miss out on points from Utah?
I guess that's a small portion. Like, that's a benefit to racing Utah. So points, purse money. So this year, Burt Brothers, who is a sponsor for the track, Burt Brothers Motorsports Park, and KOM. So they've upped the ante a little bit. And so to win that race last year, paid $1,000. Second was $500, and third was $250. This year, they're going to go $1,500 to win, $1,000 for second, and $500 for third. So they not quite doubled their investment, but kind of. Yeah. So that's exciting. So added benefit to Lugnut's life and having to race in Utah for round one instead of going to Atlanta is that, you know, there's some good money, and obviously the points to retain the number one plate in Utah will be, that's good. Yeah. I have fun racing in Utah. I'm not mad about it, but I really do wish I was going to Atlanta.
Fair enough. And I have to bring up, I don't know if you noticed my sweet little thing behind me here. I really want to put this down because
I do.
It's a joke, but
it's not, though. It's not.
Well,
we can get into that, but I did notice, and I was going to say something about it. Who is that?
Anyway, I just thought it'd be funny to have up. Everyone's always got these awesome medals and stuff behind them, and I just... Fifth place is a heck of a thing to get a... Anyway, anything
for it. I hope you feel better. So,
there you go.
Feel better?
I'm not alone. Yeah, totally. way better.
This was fifth place too. Don't worry.
Right.
But yeah, dude. You should sport it. You earned it. You got your race license. You did your racing. I know, you know, but you were there. You got the points. You did the damn thing. So you should be proud of that, man. That's a cool accomplishment, you know? And I'm actually, we can talk about me all day, but, you know, I kind of want to know, well, we'll get back to the USBA thing. I'm curious what you plan on doing this year. I mean, do you plan on doing some more racing? I know you got some track days coming up. So tell me what Easton's got going on.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, a long time ago, way, way long ago, I was hanging out with Lugnut in Utah, you that is, and we put down some points with this number right here for this big number. Let's see if I can trace it out that way. And, yeah, 911, 911, 911, she'll be coming back. We'll get at least one race weekend in this year. Yeah. I did sign up for a race license with a club out here on the East Coast. They let me keep the same number. They let me get a license without doing the school out here because I already had a license from Utah that took some emailing. And I was actually hoping to be doing their first race of the year, which is in 1, 2, 3 days. I'm not anymore, but I will be racing with them in June. So I know you helped me kind of find some.
And who's that again?
Hang on. Moto Gladiators. There it is. Moto Gladiators.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. It's a smaller club out here, but I was looking for something a little bit low-key, cheaper, because I knew I wouldn't be doing... It's not like I'm out chasing a championship or anything like that. So they pair everything up with a track day same day, and I think you pay for the track day, and then you pay $60 on top to race. And they only have three classes. There's not all this stock and super bike and all of that in each class. It's just whatever, less than 600, above 600 to 1,000, and then 1,000 cc's. So pretty simple that way. And the first race I'll be doing with them, if all goes to plan, will be in June. So
I like it. It's a different format, simplified. And I'll be honest, I tell people all the time, no matter what your skill level is, no matter what races you're doing, like seat time is seat time, gritting up is gritting up. It is all the same. When there's a checkered flag involved, it's a race, you know? So I'm just excited to hear that you're going to grit up and get after it again this year, no matter to what degree and level. So that's exciting, man.
Yeah, I mean, a certain someone helped me find some fairings last year, and I had the bike sitting in the garage all winter, and I was like, you know, I better do something with that. So, yeah, we'll give it a shot. Long term, I don't know. I have no idea what long term looks like. I don't know if the 1100cc V4 life is really for me, but we'll find out this year. Get some actual races going that aren't kind of last minute and see if I can't do something about it. So
the key is just have some fun, man. You know?
Oh, yeah.
So,
oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Back to that 1100. There's a new development, an 1100 or two is racing stock 1000 this year.
Okay.
So that's cool. So they opened up the gate for that bike. And then kind of wanted to draw back into Utah because, you know, there's some stuff to talk about there a little bit. Mm-hmm. My main competitor last year was on his 1100. Those things are ripping fast. You know, your 120 pounds or so doesn't necessarily need all that, but why not if you got it?
Yeah.
yeah. But anyways, yeah, it's a lot of bike, you know, but that's awesome. It's fun. They're fun. They handle great.
Have you, just out of curiosity, have you ridden one?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt.
It's okay. It was interesting because I rode two. One of them I was instantly comfortable on, and it was super fast. And I'm not an elbow dragger, but I literally had my elbow on the deck in like two laps on this thing. It was set up nice. Everything about it, I loved it. Mm-hmm. The other one, my gorilla of a friend, his name is Tor Christensen. Maybe he'll listen to this. He has to call him a gorilla. He's just a big, buff, bulky dude, and his setup is like way too stiff for me, and the ergonomics are wrong. So that wasn't as great of an experience, but overall, I think they're a pretty badass bike. So
okay, fair enough.
So let's knock out some USBA things. Six rounds this year. Mm-hmm. It goes east, west, east, east, west, and then perimeter.
Yeah.
So back on the long track for round six.
And that's new, right? Last year they did a perimeter track day, but I don't think they did a perimeter race last year.
They did not. So that'll be the grand finale, round six, on perimeter. Also new this year, the reintroduction of endurance racing. So in addition to enough sprint racing to wear you out over the course of a weekend, they're adding a 90-minute sprint race every round, round one through five, we'll say, 90 minutes on Saturday. So they have three classes. You can run your own bike and by yourself, or you can run one bike with three other teammates up to, or they have the relay style where it's everybody rides their own bike, teams of four. So you can have fun with it. You don't have to take it too serious as far as building an endurance bike, but it's a neat challenge and people are really excited about it. People from out of state are going to be coming down to do it. The endurance thing is huge.
Heck yeah. Okay.
So the caveat there, I guess, is perimeter round six. Not only is that a big deal, like perimeter is a special thing because it's 180 mile an hour straightaway on the big bikes. You're probably going to do 195 on your Aprilia. But it's, you would, I would on your bike if I was your size.
Yeah. No, that's straight. So the perimeter straight is nuts.
It's pretty wild. Like once you get past halfway and you're still like, dude, I still have a whole straightaway to go. It's wild.
Yeah.
So in round six on perimeter, the endurance will not be 90 minutes. It'll be 3 hours.
Sheesh. Okay. Okay.
So round six is definitely good.
I was going to say, break it down for me a little bit. You said you have multiple classes. You had 90-minute race, endurance race. You can have one bike with a team of three, or you said you could do a pass-off style. Is that four people, four bikes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so how it works is like the four people, four bikes, up two, right? So if you had two people and you wanted to do it, do two. Three people, do three, four, do four. The true endurance, so that's called Relay or Pony Express. Depending on which club is providing the endurance racing, they have different names for it, but that's a traditional version of endurance racing for clubs. The other one, the most common, is the true endurance. True endurance is one bike. You're swapping tires on the bike. You're swapping, you're putting fuel, and you're swapping riders. So you can have a team of two or three or four, but sorry, my fingers weren't working for a second. But basically, it's up to four riders, one bike. That's called true endurance. And then if you're really crazy, you got Ironman. Ironman is one man, one motorcycle. It's kind of what I'm saying.
Absolutely not. 90 minutes. So, especially the last round, you're saying 3 hours. One dude, one bike.
Dude, that would be brutal.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. So, but there's some people that want to do it, and more power to them. It's not my thing. I'm not an endurance racer. That's not my thing in general, but I will be racing endurance this year. I have a teammate that is racing endurance and wanted me on his team, and I couldn't tell that gentleman no. So, you might know him. His name's Cole Burmester.
I might have known about that one a little bit. Heard some talks in the background. That'll be fun. That'll be awesome. It'll be a good time.
It will definitely be a good time. And I'm making him ride a Kawasaki. So
sweet. So now walk me through. You guys got a game plan for that all? And you don't have to give away, you know, company secrets or anything like that. But I don't think you've done endurance. I don't think he's done endurance. The club hasn't done endurance. So everyone's kind of walking into this brand new. You guys studying up on how other people have done it? We're just going to like go by the seat of our pants for the first round, see how it goes, make a plan from there. What's the game plan?
So as a club, the USBA actually used to do endurance. It's been many years. Okay. So they have documentation of how it worked. Of course, as racers, like there's a number of us that are involved with decision making. I'm not really that guy. I said us, but I'm not. I'm more an advisor, but that have gone and raced at, like in Colorado at the MRA or whatever. So we were able to pull our experiences together in addition to the previous rule book and structure of endurance in Utah. And we're dialed, dude. Like as far as the club's concerned, it's dialed. It's 100% professional. It's fun. It is set for success. It's done.
Heck yeah.
So yeah, I mean, dude, as far as the team, like me and Cole, I was like, hey, like, let's do like this and like, let's do like that. We're kind of flying by the seat of our pants. We kind of have a vague idea of what we're doing, but you know, I'm just going to go out there and lay down some heaters and I'm going to make Cole ride most of the race.
Okay. All right.
He doesn't know it yet, but that's what's happening.
That's good. That'll work. Yeah, that'll work. Oh yeah. Man.
So, one other thing, USBA, I mean, they rearranged some racing and stuff like that, kind of renamed some classes, but everything else is kind of standard operating procedure. But in years past, and I know we've talked about this on the podcast, qualifying versus not qualifying for your grid positions, you know, in Utah, it's always been like order of sign up. Well, first points in the class. So the class leading points guy is gridded on pole. And then it goes down the points list. And then if you're new to the club, you're basically gridding in the order of which you signed up. So kind of a bummer for people who just come from out of town. This year, USBA is doing qualifying for all classes. So it used to be just KOM, the money race. Now they're qualifying. There's two qualifying sessions for every single class. So if you come out to race with USBA, you get to fight for your grid position, which adds... It honestly adds an element of fun. Like, it's like watching MotoGP. You know, like, you have qualifying. Like, that's exciting. You know, who's going to lay down that one thousandth faster lap, right? And then you have your sprint race, and then you have your main GP. So adding that element of qualifying to an already super fun club and super fun track, like, it's just elevating the game. Like, USBA this year is top-notch, man. It's going to be awesome.
That's sweet. Yeah, so qualifying, and then... Just because I'm relatively new, and I know there's some people out there that aren't necessarily doing the club racing thing, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you have 40 different 15-minute qualifying sessions, but rather that you send out groups of qualifying sessions, correct?
Yes. Yeah. So basically, it'll be the KOM group, so the premier race group, and there'll be 15, 20 of us in that session. And then they'll have like the next fastest and then the next fastest. So it'll be three separate groups. Everybody will get two opportunities just in case you have a mechanical or you get caught in traffic or something like that. They give you two chances to make a good lap time. So it'll be broken up into those three groups, which you experienced because you've seen the practice groups at USBA.
Mm-hmm.
So the practice groups are now just qualifying groups. So those same groups will be qualifying. So they'll be taking the times and actually gridding by times. So it wasn't really a big operational or logistical difference. It does add some challenges for scheduling and stuff, like day-to-day scheduling, but you know, they got it figured out. It's gonna rock, man. Like, it's, I keep saying it and I keep telling everybody USBA is a great time, but this year it's gonna be a huge step up. You know, we got some new sponsors for the club, and there's amateur money too, so there's not just purse money for the KOM guys. Like, they're gonna give amateurs money for different various races as well. So if you're an amateur racer and you want a chance to earn some tire money, like, USBA's got it for you. It's pretty rad.
Yeah, that's awesome. No, that's super sweet. And I think I mentioned this a lot last year while Cole was still on the podcast and racing out there, but the fact that you've got East and West and now finishing up at the perimeter. I know some people are against the perimeter. Some people don't like it. It's probably my favorite layout there. I love that layout, personally. And I also think that that's a super sweet way to just kind of, like, end the season, you know, like, season finale. Let's do it on the big track. 3-hour endurance race. Let's get out there and get after it. I think it's super awesome. And it also kind of brings in that, like, element of surprise. Like, it brings everyone to an even playing field for the last race of the year. So if by chance Lugnut doesn't already have the championship secured by then, you might be able to get them. I don't know. Who knows?
Bring it. So, on that note, I'm the opposite. Perimeter is not my favorite because my favorite corners from west and my favorite corners from east get taken out of the equation when we run perimeter. So while I might shine on east and west, I've only got 5 laps on the perimeter track ever. I mean, they were pretty fast, granted, but you know, you were there that day. You're riding the Husky, the 401. I'm pretty sure that's what you rode that day. So yeah, but Stacy had her Ducati there too. You remember the V4?
I do remember that. Yeah, I did take the Husky out on the perimeter.
I can only imagine how toyish that felt.
I will say, I have a very bad, very hard time when I'm not riding my own bike, specifically when I'm riding someone else's. I have a hard time kind of like letting go and actually riding the bike and trying to forget that there is someone else's money sitting underneath me. For two, we talked about the straight earlier and how big and long and crazy that straight is. And doing that on a bike that maxes out when you hit that halfway point is, you just kind of start to feel bad. And the 401 is a super sweet little bike. I know Cole absolutely loves that thing. I don't love it quite as much as him, but it's definitely a ton of fun. But you take a little tiny bike like that down that straight, and yeah, you get halfway and you're just like, is it okay to be sitting here in sixth gear at red line for this long? Like, is it, you going to be okay down there, buddy? Oh man. It was ridiculous. The rest of it, you know, is kind of fine, but that straight with that bike is just something else. Yeah.
I'll be honest. So I mentioned Stacy. Hey, say hi.
Hi.
Come on. She said no. She's tired. I always talk about Stacy, but she's sitting right here. She's listening. There she is. Hi, Stacy. Yeah. We always joke when we hear airplanes when we're outside and stuff. Hey, there goes Stacy. So, but when we were there at that perimeter round, she had her Ducati there, and I don't think I rode it, did I? I think I was scared. I didn't have the balls to ride it because that thing is so damn fast. It was also like a 1200, you know, V4.
Mm-hmm.
It was the S model. So damn fast. I was like, dude, I am not riding that on this track. I'm like, it is too fast. The brakes and the suspension were stock, you know? I'm like, it is way too fast for that.
I remember being in sixth gear pinned on the front straightaway and it still being long.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, you get to sixth gear and you're just on it. So, but, you know, perimeter's exciting. People love it. It's a thing. It's a spectacle. You know, if it's your thing to go as fast as you can humanly go on your motorcycle, perimeter's probably a good idea. It's in September, Utah. So figure it out. Make it there.
There you go.
Come do a 3-hour endurance race Ironman. Prove that you're a man.
Yeah, I recommend that for everyone. Great way to end your season.
Yeah, me too.
Go in the winter. Yeah. 100% do that. Yep.
Yeah. You won't walk for a week. But...
Oh, man. You know, maybe I'll come out and do that. I will only do that. That's it. And you're right.
Just that and do it on the Husky. Let's see what those Austrians have for longevity.
You know, that seat might actually be more comfortable.
Oh.
That, you know, I don't.
Dude, that's a factor when you got to be on a motorcycle for 3 hours.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be putting a street seat back on for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially on the perimeter where you have that long straight in the back to relax.
Yeah. I don't know. I think, I mean, there's a lot of hype around the Utah thing. I don't think there's much else new. I might be missing something, but, you know, there's some stuff behind the scenes. They're making the website easier to use and stuff like that. But as far as we're concerned, I mean, that's some big changes from a club from 1 year to the next, and it's super exciting. So if you're listening from Utah, if you're listening from Nevada, Arizona, Colorado, Idaho, whatever other states might be near Utah, find your ass to Utah, come out and race. USBA, what is it? UtahSBA.com. Go look it up.
Yep, UtahSBA.com. I always just Google Utah Sport Bike Association. I used to Google Superbike, which if you Google Superbike, it'll still come up, so that's okay. But UtahSBA, yep. And I think there's a certain, at last I heard, they've got a really cool person running their social media these days. So go follow them on there, too.
Social media, you said?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I think it's just Utah SBA on everything. Yeah. So.
Well, sweet. That wraps up Utah-ish.
Yeah. Enough. So, I mean, you know.
So we kind of touched on it in the beginning. You're not going to make it out to Road Atlanta and there's details behind that, and that's okay. But as far as Moto America goes, are we planning on seeing a lug nut out there for any of the other rounds?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. So, I know, you know, and I'll spill the beans. You know, like, I'm Privateer Industries, and, like, I'm proud of that. But, like, I don't get to race motorcycles for a living. I have a day job, and there's some things going on with my day job that are, it's great stuff, but I can't go to Atlanta. I got to be closer to home. And so that, and then the funding, you know, like, racing Moto America, we've talked about it. It's expensive, man. It's $8,000 to $10,000 for me to travel from Vegas to Atlanta to go race. Easy. I mean, that's if you have a perfect mm-hmm. weekend. And then, you know, ship back across the country. So I say that if anybody's interested in, you know, putting their logos all over this big, beautiful 30-foot trailer that's kind of got a weird illusion of distance, but it's pretty big. Put your big old logo on it or something like that for advertising. You know, reach out to Easton or hit me up. He knows my socials, and we might be able to work something out. Maybe I will make it to Atlanta. Who knows? But we're running out of time. Regardless, though, the schedule is pretty rad for Stock 1000 this year. So they're going to Road Atlanta, which I'm, again, super bummed I'm not going to be there because the track is awesome. Then the tour moves on, and the Stock 1000 at least ends up in Road America, which I've never done, Virginia, okay. which I've never done, Ohio, which they've been back to for the first time in years last year, also never done that. And then the season ends in Texas at COTA. Which I have been there. It was miserably hot, and I'm looking forward to going back there again. So Lugnut, Privateer will be at all five rounds. Lugnut will be at four of the five rounds, in addition to all the racing in Utah and some pop-in rounds in Colorado and stuff like that. So.
Okay. Heck yeah. Awesome. I mean, Virginia's back. I want to say back, but as long as I've been watching, Virginia's new to Moto America this year.
Yeah, it's been off the calendar for a few years.
So I have heard, and not necessarily from motorcycle people, but I've heard that VIR is one crazy track. It's kind of, from what I've heard, almost up there with Road Atlanta, not necessarily the same. And I wouldn't go saying, like, hey, if you've ridden Road Atlanta, you can ride VIR. But from what I've heard, it's like kind of that old, classic, iconic, this thing's here to kill you type of racetrack. So good luck. Hope you have fun.
don't die. Yeah, I got it. So I'd agree with you just from what I see and from the conversations I have with some of my fellow riders, you know, like Corey Alexander, he's on the Super Sport Ducati. He was saying that Virginia is one of his favorite tracks, but it's definitely one of those tracks where it's very intimidating, very high speed, blind corners, stuff like that. So unfortunately, just showing up there and racing and never having been on that track before, kind of like my last, you know, 10 races of Moto America were, it's a learning curve, you know, but I accept the challenge. It's fun. You know, we're definitely looking for some better results this year. But again, it's all new tracks. So that's part of the reason why I wanted to go back to Atlanta, because I felt like I did pretty well there for the troubles that we had and the limited track time I had there. Mm-hmm. Being on a bike that I'm comfortable with and that I know and having been there before, I feel like I'd probably do pretty well at Atlanta if I was going there this year. But it is what it is, and, you know, definitely looking forward to Road America. I hear from many people that's their favorite track in the country. It's super fast. It's very long. It's got these cool, like, tunnels of trees that you're going through at, like, Mach Jesus, and so I'm definitely excited for that one. I think that's probably the one I'm looking forward to the most this year, to be honest. So I was bummed last year it wasn't on the calendar, and it's on the calendar this year. And, you know, I don't think – if I wasn't doing any other round, I still think I would make that happen.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah, Road America. I haven't talked to anyone besides Ken Hill that has ridden there, which Ken Hill's a pretty big name, and he did say that that's his favorite track in America, and he's been quoted saying that all over. I believe the phrase he uses is old school badass. And
makes sense.
Yeah, watching the race in there, I played it on a video game. That doesn't mean anything, but yeah, once again, it's just one of those. I feel like it's an American icon. You know, I'd put Laguna Seca, Road America, Road Atlanta, probably VIR, and then maybe something up in the Northeast. I don't know those ones as well. Probably Pit Race or something. But I'd put those in the American icon tracks. Maybe even Indiana. I don't know. No one races there anymore, but.
Yeah. Well, I guess that track was super fun in Indianapolis. So they did it a couple years ago with Moto America. And I think they only did it for 1 or 2 years, and then they weren't there anymore. And I'm like, well, that kind of sucks because it looked fun. But it's kind of Daytona-esque where you're using, you know, the car track and then getting back onto the infield or whatever.
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of rad tracks in the country. I mean, that one that we did in Colorado, High Plains Raceway, for me, that's still one of my favorite tracks in the country. Like, the track is super fun. It's grueling. It's fun. It's fast. I loved it. But, like, I know you like the Ridge a lot. And I would compare High Plains Raceway to the Ridge, which is also one of my favorite tracks. Barber's beautiful, obviously iconic. We're lucky, you know? But on that note, Petrucci, he was racing the Superbike class, Moto America.
Mm-hmm.
I think he did a season or two, but at the end of his run here, he was like, definitely Road America was the raddest track in the States. So,
interesting.
You know, okay. That's an unbiased opinion. And yeah, it was definitely interesting. Interesting to hear that. So I'm excited to go there. Moto America, nothing's changed. The only thing that's changed really is airbag suits this year. A few little rule changes or whatever. But I think the racing at... Did you watch the racing at Barber?
Mm-hmm.
I think racing was pretty good. The rain was weird and there were some weird things that happened. And... you know, but like some of the Superbike races were good. Fong was awesome. Josh Hayes taking a win in the rain at 50 years old. That's freaking badass.
Yeah.
By the way, he's one of the guys that got me into riding dirt bikes. I blame him.
Okay. Okay. Interesting.
But, yeah, I mean, it was a good weekend. They got the new, what do you call it? Was that the Talent Cup or whatever? Talent Cup?
Yeah.
And those kids are ripping and, you know.
The Moto America Talent Cup. Yeah. So I did not catch the race. I did catch some highlights. And, you know, most of the coolest shots I saw and also the scariest for me, having done a little bit of track, like I did a track day there last year. When you go over the curb in the back at Barber, like, everyone rides over that curb. I cannot imagine doing that. Like, I can't imagine doing that, like, riding that track and not doing it, because it is just so natural. The first time I came up to it, I was doing a lead follow anyway, and the guy just, like, kind of went over the curb, and it was real stupid because we were all doing, like, 10 miles an hour through there. Real dumb. Anyway, but we went over the curb. Then later in the day, I, like, came through, and for whatever reason, I had kind of been focused on some other part of the track, and I come around, and I just see this yellow-blue stripe, and I was like, whoa! And it just super threw me off because my brain was like, you got to go around that. And then I half realized, nope, that's the thing we go over, and I kind of did some wishy-washy over it, not over it type of deal. But, dude, I can't imagine just full sending it over that thing in the wet, because I know some people, like, low-key catch air on that. I don't know what that looks like in the rain. I think you might have... You guys kind of were in the rain a little bit last year?
Damp. But I personally was, like, a little timid, you know? Because I'm a SoCal boy originally, and we don't get a whole lot of rain. Actually, the most rain riding I did last year was in New Jersey, and it was, like, half the weekend was rain, and half of it was warm and dry, and so whatever, but... you know, I know that Barber's always had a problem with drainage in certain areas, and so that was a concern, but I was actually surprised that I seen those guys hitting that same curb that you're talking about as hard as they were when it was wet. Like, I was shocked. You know, they were going at it like it was dry, and I was like, okay, you guys are gonna die. Like, you need to chill out.
Yeah, because you hit it at an angle. You come out of it at an angle. And like I said, I swear I've seen some people catch air right there. Like, and curbs, everyone knows curbs are painted. Maybe they didn't paint it that weekend just because they knew it was going to be wet. But paint, rain, rubber, it don't, like, those things don't mix together. So, but anyway, sure. Yeah, it looked like a good time for sure. Super good weekend. Tons of fun. You mentioned earlier, I don't want to gloss over it, what's his nuts? Danilo Petrucci. I can never say his first name right because it's supposed to just be Daniel. It's not. Sorry. That's
good
rude
enough for
of
me.
But anyway, Petrucci, talking about Road America, going back to a Ken Hill conversation I had a long, long time ago, he actually mentioned that he loved the perimeter at UMC because it had a very European vibe to it. So it's kind of interesting to like think about, because I like it myself, and I've never raced it, and I imagine it's much different, and it's been a long time since I have ridden it. But I'd be curious to know, after this year riding both and then doing the perimeter at the end of the year, I'll be curious to know how your feelings are on it once you've actually like raced it and really ridden it, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Cause I'm a little biased. Like I said, it takes away some fun parts of the track for me, and I've only got a couple laps on it, but they used to race World Superbike on the perimeter there. And you know, those places outside of Laguna, they go for that whole FIM European feel, right? Those are the only tracks they really want to go to. So I can see why Ken would say that. But yeah, I imagine like a guy like Danilo would probably fit right in there. It's fun, don't get me wrong. It's just not quite, not yet at least. I don't see the glamour in it. I mean, ultimately, going fast, like top speed on a motorcycle is kind of cool. It's also very scary. I like to stop and turn fast, you know? Hence the stoppies. But So I like flow and stuff, and so that top speed thing, and that's what most people go for because they never get an opportunity to just like do 160 to 180 miles an hour on a motorcycle outside of a freeway, which don't do that. So yeah, I can see the glamour behind it, but you know, for me, it's maybe it'll grow on me. I'm looking forward to it. You know, I'm looking forward to the summer. I think taking the break this year, I really needed it. Taking the break during the winter and doing some dirt bike stuff. Mission accomplished. It was designed to stay bike fit and do and kind of rekindle my spirits for motorcycles, because when you're racing every single weekend and traveling the country and traveling for work and everything else, you get to a certain point where you're just damn tired.
Yeah, you just want to stay home and relax for once.
Yeah, hang out with my babe, hang out with the kitties, hang out with the snakes, old Jack Miller.
Heck yeah.
Maybe watch some racing, maybe. Speaking of, been trailing along with MotoGP.
Are you asking or are you saying you have been?
Both.
Yeah,
You've been watching?
I've been following along, yeah.
I know, I've been listening to your shows and kind of catching your synopses, so I kind of already knew the answer, but your boy is cleaning up house, doing pretty damn good, having fun.
He is. Yeah, it's a scary year to be a fan. You know, in the past couple years, it's been like, who knows what this guy will do. It probably won't be great, but there's a like kindle of hope. This year, it's like, okay, let's just hope he doesn't wreck it out, because if he doesn't, he's probably got it. And I'm not trying to be all braggy and whatever, but it's a weird spot to be. Yeah, more importantly, I caught practice earlier today and qualifying. And old Jorge Martin is back out on track, and that is an interesting situation to be in.
For him, yeah.
Yeah, because I feel so bad. You know, last year I was kind of making fun of him, like, why'd you go to Aprilia? You threw your career down the drain. And then he decided to run the number one plate, and I was like, well, good thing, because he will never get it again. Anyway, but, you know, Jorge Martin's got talent.
Hater.
And say what?
I said hater.
Well, you know, you gotta pick on the guys. They make so much money. You gotta pick on them. But what was rough was seeing him go out and seeing him go out so early on. And explaining it to some of my friends, I'm like, you know, he's not coming back till the fourth round, and he missed all of the practicing and testing, practicing and testing, pretty much. And so just thinking about like where that puts you compared to everyone else. I mean, you watch him come back, and it's sad, it's rough, but I'm just imagining, like, he's still out there getting used to a brand new bike. He didn't, and maybe even dialing things in.
He has no time on it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he doesn't even have the ergonomics fully set up yet, or any idea of a baseline and any of that. Like, it's such a nuts spot to be.
And it's pretty wild how, like, going from one bike to the next is such a difference. You know, like, I've been fortunate to ride a few bikes, and I think that I've done a pretty good job of going fast on everything I get on, you know, and not obviously world champion MotoGP fast, but nonetheless. But it's weird, like, different bikes make a lap time differently. So, you know, when I'm close to Corey at Chuckwalla, or right around, you know, Bryce Cornbow, and Deon Campbell on their R1s, like, I can't just follow them and go just as fast. They'll leave me. Like, I have to do my own thing the Kawasaki way. And the engineers design a bike that way. And being Jorge Martin, like, I could see why he wanted to make the jump. It's probably better money, factory seat, the spotlight. But the other side of thing is a little bit of, like, pride, right? Like, what if I went to this other manufacturer and I put him on the map and I won a championship? And, you know, I expect, give him two or three rounds, and that guy is going to be trouble for people up front. But it's going to take two or three rounds until he gets to that point, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not, I don't know. My only fear is that Aprilia doesn't actually have the bike for him. Because, I'm with you. Jorge Martin's got the talent. Right now he's still getting back into, that's the other thing too, is not only does he not have time on the bike, but he's also getting back into full fitness after some pretty hefty surgery. I hope that Aprilia can show up with a bike that he can actually use. And I'm not quite as confident as you, I would say, but I'm pretty confident. I think if, as long as Aprilia can deliver him a package, he can 100%. Yeah. Get him a couple rounds on the bike, get him some time, get everything set up, get used to it. He's definitely going to be out there breaking apart the red that streaks the top five.
Yeah. Yeah. And Bezzecchi came off of the Ducati as well, which he had a few instances of success, but I wouldn't say that he was a top three guy, right? Obviously, he didn't have that many podiums. I think he got a win or two or whatever. But he's had a few moments of success on the Aprilia already. So I look at that and I'm like, all right. If Bezzecchi is, like, coming to terms with it and he's able to find some pace and they're working through some things, they both came off the same platform. So if Martin had 2% more talent, not saying he does, you know, but if he did, then he's probably going to be in pretty good shape in not too long. He's a world champion, right? So
yeah. it's got to be something.
Yeah. So I have to say, like, I don't really have a whole lot to offer on the topic of MotoGP this year. I've been watching. It's been great. I'm excited for Mark. I'm not a Mark fanboy, for instance, but I love seeing how much fun that he's having, and that is just rad. Like, I love it. But I think I'm most impressed right now with the riding of Alex Marquez. So yeah. They're all on GP24s. And
yeah,
on an equal playing field, Alex has done very well, and I'm super excited for him, and I hope he can find that extra 1% to go out there and stick it to Mark once in a while, because, like, how cool is that to be standing on the world championship level podium with your brother? Like, I love that family stuff, and I just think that that is the coolest thing. Like, I'm envious every time I see it. So super stoked for Alex, super stoked for Mark. I think as the season goes on, it'll progress to become more interesting. So stick in there.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, no, absolutely. Seeing Alex up there has been super awesome. Knowing that they're all on relatively equal machinery, especially after Bagnaia did actually just drop back to the 2024. Yeah, it feels like it is Alex's time to shine. And this year and next year, hopefully, because next year I think Ducati's still locked in on that same bike, basically. They can't make any engine adjustments, so... Yeah, it'll be a good couple of years. And the cool part is, you know, this isn't actually cool, but I think just to back up what you're saying about brothers on the podium, to me the coolest part is that if either of them wins, they both get to go home and celebrate, realistically. Like, they're both going to that celebration. Right. So, and they're both going to be happy about it. They've been pretty
clear and honest about that. And they're both genuinely, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was just going to say that. Both genuinely happy, right? Like, they relish in each other's success, and that's rad, dude. Like, that for me has been the most exciting thing about this year in MotoGP, honestly, is the brotherly, Alex, he called himself P2, but, and that's funny, throw out to Ty. I'm going to throw that out to Ty. If he watches this, he'll laugh, or maybe he won't. Maybe he'll be mad anyways. But I think they were dubbed like the Super Marquez brothers. And I was like, hell yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. I like it.
I hadn't heard that one. That's great. Yeah. Oh, that's great. Well, heck yeah.
So yeah, man, I'm here. I'm going to do something. This is a different segment of your show. So I'm here at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, and we got this cool race trailer. I had a cabinets and AC2. This thing is 30 feet long, front to back. We fit six bikes. Got our tools. It's a mess. Got spare tires. Most everything's outside. Suits. They smell right now because it's hot. But I just figured I'd show you guys around my trailer real quick. Yeah, we're full swing here. I mean, my hands are dirty. We're out there working on the bikes, and we got qualifying coming up tomorrow. We got tech coming up in a few minutes. I'm excited to get back into this road racing stuff. It's great talking to you about it because it just amps me up even more.
Thank you.
But super pumped about it. Hoping to cash some checks this weekend and kick some ass and have some fun and cheer my boys on. And yeah, dude, I don't know. Life's good, man. Life's good out here. It's cool to catch up with you. That's for sure.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I've been looking forward to it. I've been planning on getting you back on at some point. It's been awesome having you on here. Able to catch back up and, yeah, you know, keep in touch. Let me know how the weekend goes. And I think if I'm trying to add another track that I've watched motorcycle racing at, so I'm planning on making my way up to VIR later this year. So we'll definitely meet up.
Heck yeah.
At that point.
Well, it's gonna happen. I mean, whether you come out to Utah or whatever, definitely keep in touch. Come see me. Come see me, whether it's in VIR or whatever. But I miss you, man. I miss you. It's been too damn long.
It has. That's what winter does to
kids. Kids are cute. They're growing up. Heck yeah. You know what, though? I got to be honest. If I could pass this hat across my screen right now and trade you for that sick WD-40 hat, I am so jealous of that thing. You guys like my hair, by the way?
Yeah, that's good.
I need a freaking haircut.
That's
get to up.
That's a look like classic.
Pretty solid, right?
Oh, man. All right, well,
right
hey,
on, man.
If this is your first time seeing Lugnut, go back and watch our older episodes because he's a blast, and we'll get him back on again at some point. But we'll sign off for now, and we'll see you all in the next episode.
Thank you, guys.
On the ground at 100 miles an hour.